Yeah.
I'm gonna grab more water. Give me 2 seconds. I am also drinking wine. Don't worry, I haven't changed. Episode 97 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on fantasy keeper and dynasty league formats. That's actually not true anymore. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Craig, on a scale from one to great job, how good a job did we do of recording another podcast before the new year was over?
I think we did a great job.
If nothing else, we gave the people what they've come to expect at this point.
Yeah, I think we've delivered. And in this administration of Tino, I think we've done monumental things that the biased press is not acknowledging. And I think we did a great job. Some people are calling it a performance. You know, I call it work.
Well, people are really saying that more and more is definitely the thing. Yes.
Yes.
Brett, on a scale from one to you just re-signed Jay Bruce, how happy are you that we're all here tonight?
I'm so happy. I love you guys.
That's great. Love us enough to...
Okay, I'm just going to... Ben and I... Brett, I don't remember if we talked to you about it before, but it amazes me every time, and if you saw Twitter, you'll know it. But how old is Jay Bruce?
Jay Bruce is 31 years old.
I believe he's actually only 30, and it's astonishing to me, because he's... Has he inherited the dad mantle?
He has the face of a mailman from 1964.
I feel like I know people were going with Adam Lind as dad, but his beard, he's like biker dad at this point with his weird chin beard.
It's
I feel like Jay Bruce is most... Seth Smith. That's what it is, right?
The only person in organized baseball who looks older than Jay Bruce is Brady Aiken.
Brady Aiken could be Jay Bruce.
His 401k looks phenomenal, though.
It's probably true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, so welcome back to Tino. We have some good news for you tonight. The first bit of good news is a little bit technical, but it's that 97 episodes in, we've figured out how to adjust our microphone settings. So none of your three hosts had any idea basically what the buttons on the back of our Yeti microphones did. And thanks to our producer, George, we have now learned that it should be set to the heart and not to, as Brett eloquently put it, the two circles in Congress with each other. So hopefully the audio quality is a little bit better tonight. And then the second bit of good news is that 97 episodes into Tino, we think we finally figured out what we actually want Tino to be. So as one or two of you may have noticed and may even have pointed out to us on Twitter once or twice over the years, there has indeed been a few off seasons here and there, and that's largely because it's impossible to talk about dynasty baseball every week and have it always be interesting for an hour. And frankly, it's not exactly what we want to do and what we're probably the best geared to do either. So what we're promising is that going forward, at least one and usually two sections of every podcast will be about dynasty baseball. But we are also going to mix in some other stuff. We're going to mix in some real baseball. We're going to mix in some goofy segments. If Craig gets married again, we might devote an entire segment to that. So definitely still a definitely still a dynasty baseball theme for you. And that's always going to be the core of what we're bringing you. But in the interest of trying to keep our interest a little higher, and hopefully by doing that, getting you guys more episodes, we're going to be mixing up the subject matter just a little bit. And honestly, it's just the best time for us to make this announcement because this is the time of year we have the most dynasty stuff to talk about. So after that big disclaimer, I would imagine the next several episodes are still going to be very, very dynasty heavy. And that starts with this episode because we have both Brett's top 50 dynasty signees for 2018 column to talk about, as well as the first positional series list to talk about, which, of course, is catcher. So basically, moving forward, each section will be hosted by a different person in the podcast, and we'll rotate as we move through. But first up for episode 97 is Craig, and Craig is going to take us through Brett's top 50 Dynasty signees list.
Yeah, so I'm going to start right at the top. I think it's a discussion we've had already, but I think we've also gotten some clarification on how these guys are playing out. What you have Ohtani 1 and Keston Hira 2. I know you really love Hira. How big was the gap there, Brett?
It's a little bit bigger than you would think based on how much, you know, I love Hira. I think Ohtani is, I mean, one, Ohtani is just so much younger than the players we're used to seeing come over from Japan. And he's also more talented than the players we're used to seeing come over from Japan. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of thing where we don't know exactly how Ohtani's talent is going to play out. He would have been first on this list if he had, if he had no prospects of hitting in the majors. But with that extra bit, I mean, the additional chance that the Angels screw up his development somehow by trying to do a two-way protocol is outweighed by, you know, just the even slightly more ceiling that he has. I mean, we have heard how he's going to be used in fantasy leagues from a couple of different providers. He's generally going to be one player who has both offense and pitching eligibility, and then you can just use him one place in a given scoring period. There are some places that are going to split him into two, which I think is kind of crazy, but you know, such is life. But yeah, he's ranked number one both just as a pitcher and as the Ohtani that we know and are excited about.
And Ben, in terms of his split value, like it's less about second guessing Brett, but like how do you see Ohtani being valued? You know, I know we're going to get to this in another episode, but we're all in the RDI, the RotoWire Dynasty League. He went in what was it, the third round in that? Was that about right for you? How are you valuing him?
No, well, first of all, let me just say how happy I am to get a chance to talk about Shohei Ohtani on this podcast. I feel like it's something we've never done before. Maybe we can follow this up with some Kyle Schwarber and Xander Bogaerts talk. I think that was too high for Ohtani, frankly, but I still agree that Ohtani is the overall top dynasty prospect for the out of the 2018, not the top dynasty prospect. In this list, I believe that he is the top guy just because of his upside on the mound and the fact that he does have multiple paths to value. And the fact that while, you know, Hira and Robert and Lewis are very solid dynasty prospects, you know, none of those guys are elite names in my eyes. So I think the third round is definitely too high because that means he went around pick, what, like 50 or 60? That's not where I'd be taking him. But I also think that reasonably, you know, if you're looking to get him much past that, you're just not going to get him because someone is going to value him around there.
I think he was actually
in the 40s, right?
43 or 44.
In my head it was 43, but I was just pulling it up. But yeah, I'm going to be the dissenting voice on him. I think several episodes ago, which is now 6 months, I actually preferred him to Hira just because of the time to impact. He's going to be here immediately. My words of caution, my cold water that I'm throwing on this is not that I doubt his talent, but he barely got to pitch recently. So I'm worried about how much value he's actually providing in the near term on the mound, how many innings he's actually going to be able to throw. There is a UCL issue. They're going to live with it. They're going to do whatever they're going to do, but it's just adding a little more risk to the situation. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to use him as a bat or how that's going to translate. I actually think, as things play out, he might have more value as a bat than on the mound. But, you know, I'm probably going to look foolish for saying that. So that's my cold water on that. Brett, Luis Robert and Royce Lewis feel like two different flavors of the shruggy guy to me. Is that how you saw them?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they both kind of have the same vibe, right? I mean, they're kind of five-tool guys. I think neither of them has huge power potential. Both of them are more speed-based than power-based.
Everyone has power potential right now, Brett.
What was that?
Everyone has power potential in these days.
Well, I guess. But if everyone has power potential, then no one has power potential.
I'm getting real existential here.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, they both did the whole, you know, really great performance at a really young age. You know, Royce Lewis came out and was just phenomenal in his pro debut, whereas Ribeiro's was, you know, unbelievable in Cuba before he left as a 17-year-old. Mm-hmm. He, you know, I think some of that gets a little forgotten because he didn't really get a chance to do much in 2017. But he is a prospect who has proven a lot at a young age, and I'm really excited to see what he's going to do in 2018 as he gets a real shot at a full season assignment, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think he's the guy, and this is maybe from my experience as on the IRL prospect list, if we want to call it that, the top 101, and even on the White Sox top 10, that we just have so little feel for, you know, because we haven't seen him at all, and he hasn't been stateside really. That, you know, he could be near the top of that list. He could be someone who would challenge Hira just because he's a five-tool guy, you know, or be a lot closer to Otani, or when we look back on this in a while, be the top guy just because. But we don't know yet. It, you know what I mean?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I am in my very, very rough draft of the Dynasty Top 101. I actually do have Roberto ahead of Hira.
Yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily crazy. It's just it's how you value risk, right?
Yeah, no, it was close. It was close for me. I mean, that's not it. Hira was closer to Robert than he was to Otani.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
You guys, I came so close to calling him Robert. It was just so close.
No, you did. Well, you did the first time.
Oh, I did the first time?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I'll take 50% at this point.
We're turning over, you know, new year, new Tino. I was trying to turn over a new leaf and not call you on it, but here we are. We can't deny our true selves. So, Ben, I lobbied hard for us in RDI to draft this next guy. Tell me why I love Joe Adell so much.
He's a toolsy outfielder with low probability but star upside.
That's it. That's the whole
thing. Frankly, the only thing that's missing is that he's not a Ranger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll get to it because I like the Rangers version of this too. So
I'm sure you do.
we'll get to him in a little bit. Brett, he was the last guy in this tier. What's separating him? What made him the bottom of this tier, basically? What's the separation there?
I think it's the risk with the hit tool, and I think it's how the hit tool plays in with everything else. I think both Lewis and Robert, and especially here, I think you could envision all of them having at least a plus hit tool. I think Adell is going to have a harder time even getting to, you know, above average. But I mean, if he has an average hit tool, the power and the speed is going to play through tremendously. But yeah, I mean, it's a riskier profile. But the payoff, you know, the payoff with Adell, I think, is slightly higher than with the two guys directly ahead of him.
Yeah, Robert and Lewis.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. So we have a gap. We have our first gap. That's the top tier. The next guy is someone who's gotten. I have not heard a bad word about him since he's been drafted by the Padres, Mackenzie Gore. He's a lanky lefty, three pitches. He's the top arm who doesn't have a bat fallback. Why is he over someone like the top overall pick in Hunter Green, Brett?
Yeah, I like Gore's overall skill set better than I like Green's. I mean, Green has the flashy velocity and he's got the flashy smile to go with it. It's a You know, Green is a really, really good prep pitching prospect, Mackenzie Gore has the fastball, has the breaker, has the advanced pitchability for a prep pitcher, and he's left-handed. And it's just you can see the eventual ceiling coming into clearer view than I think you can with Green. And generally with prep arms, it is about upside. But Gore, I think Gore's upside is really not that much different than Green's. And given that he's in, given the organizations and given how quickly I think they could move, I think Gore is going to be a faster mover than Green. He gets the edge for me.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I don't have any real disagreements. Ben, talk to me why Gore is a risk this high. I mean, Brett compares him to Jay Groom. Jay Groom had a rough first season. You're the guy that we turn to for pitching warnings.
Yeah, I mean, I would first of all like to take this opportunity to point out that it's pronounced Grom.
I'm not going to deal with that. I'm not doing this Boston thing. It's room, not rum. I'm not dealing with it.
Okay. I don't think you want me to explain why prep pitchers are so risky. I don't. He has all the makings of. God, this is difficult to phrase. Out of all the pitchers with his profile, I think it's fair to say that he is a little bit safer, but that still makes him very risky, if that makes sense. So I have no problem at all with Brett putting him first. I really like Hunter Green. They're neck and neck in my eyes.
You like the first overall pick. Interesting.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd start out 2018 Tino by really going out on some limbs here.
Top two pick, yeah.
Yeah. Well, for example, like I'd have Green over Ramos, and I wouldn't think too hard about that.
Now, them's fighting words.
Yeah, I know. Well, you have to be the hipster and like the obscure Giants prospect went later.
Hey, his name is... He's got a phenomenal name.
I would take him over Hunter Green in the name draft.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
But I have no problem with Gore here. I think I would couple Gore and Green together more closely, but given that there's one player separating them, even I can't find a reason to be a piss boy about it. So,
okay, that's fair. Brett, please tell Ben why he's wrong about Helio Ramos.
Because he can hit the fuck out of the ball.
Yeah, that's it. Let's earn the explicit label.
Then why isn't he above Gore?
I really like Gore.
is Brett, let me ask you this. This is off the top of my head, and comps always go poorly, but is there a reason for people not to get Max Fried flashbacks with Mackenzie Gore?
I think Gore is what people wanted Max Fried to be.
Yeah.
Myself included. But I think Gore is the real deal. And Fried had some developmental hurdles and he had Tommy John and, it has not gone smoothly for him, but, I am not dissuaded by what Max Fried has done.
The injury is a big deal. I do think, like you mentioned that he could have a pair of sevens with the fastball and the curve. I think the curve is closer now. The fastball is not premium velocity right now, but he could certainly grow into it. And I think that's something you're probably going to want to watch, just in terms of keeping track of. I would watch his velocity. He's going to be great without it. He's got three pitches, all of that. But, that's one thing to keep an eye on, I think.
Well, and if history has told us anything, it's that, putting all your hopes behind a lefty Gore is always a sure bet to just pay off. So,
good point. So, Brett, I'm going to stick with you for a minute because we're still on arms, and I know Brett, I know Ben likes this one, so I'm not going to make him say bad words about him. But what was the gap between Shane Baz at 10 and Hunter Green at 8, even though there was a substantial gap in their actual draft number? In the first round.
Yeah, I think there's a bigger gap than you would think, just because I did put the word gap in the article a bunch of times. But I didn't struggle with the decision to put Green ahead of Boz. I just, you know, I really like Gaza's raw stuff. I think it's really good. It's advanced for a high school arm. I mean, the guy who Boz reminds me of, we're going to get into, you know, pitchers who we ended up being disappointed in because of injury reasons, but is Shelby Miller. You know, it's not
Texans with a fastball.
It's not the exact same profile, but yeah. It's that sort of, you know, guy who's just a little bit more overlooked than he should be in the first round of the draft, has really has a good arsenal, a good fastball, and knows where he's throwing it. And I, you know, it's a good organization for him. It's a good, obviously it's a good park to end up in if he, you know, if he makes the majors with the Pirates. And I think he's got real, you know, SP2 potential where, you know, where a lot of the names behind him really, really struggle to find it.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And are you sure, is this just your pronunciation of it being Boz, or am I wrong in saying Baz, or do we just
I'm pretty not? Sure it's Boz, because his Twitter handle is the Wizard of Boz, I think.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. All right, so Ben, to you on Shane Boz, how many Shane Boz Lerman jokes are you going to make this year?
Probably zero, because I understand the reference.
Oh my God. Brett, did you at least know?
Is it a reference that only old people would get? Because that would understand why you...
It is. He is a movie director who I assume still makes movies. I don't like any of them, but I, you know.
How old are the like, would Jay Bruce's face get it? How old is the reference?
Yeah, I think, it might be in a sweet spot where Jay Bruce's face would be too old to get it. He did, like, Moulin Rouge, I think is his big one. He did Romeo plus Juliet.
Okay.
Does that...
Even really hit the fuck out of here with these bird references. So that's
Moulin Rouge won awards. Come on. I hate it, but whatever. All right. Anyway, Ben, I'm just going to try and move the heat off me by letting you speak on a big beefy boy for a little bit.
It's not rare for me to enjoy big beefy boys, which, wow, what a sentence. But I like Jake Berger, and I pushed Brett to... include him at the bottom end of this top 10 here. Yes, there is definitely a risk that he does not remain at third base, but I mean, he's got big time power, not just like the ball is juiced power. He's got real 30 plus home run power, even in the context of how he thought of baseball a year or two ago. And he's the guy I'm falling for. Every year I fall for one best shape of his life story. And there's a lot of Jake Berger best shape of his life stories coming out right now. So my hope is that he's a guy who can, you know, either fake it at third or at least play enough at third to retain eligibility for the first 3 to 5 years of his career. And if he does that, I mean, we're talking about, you know, 30 plus homers at third base potentially. So it's not a very deep class, which I think should be pretty clear when you start to read some of Brett's captions. And in a class like this, I just really like Berger's upside over some of the other arms we're about to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. Brett, do you have anything to add to that?
No, he's a big boy in a small park. That's
the dream. That's what you want to hear in a one-sentence summation. So I'm not going to go through every single player. I just wanted to touch on those guys in the top 10. 11, I do want to touch on. Brendan McKay, I'm going to kind of talk for a little bit, and then Brett's going to tell me why I'm wrong. McKay obviously has the same kind of, I don't want to say issue, but maybe intrigue that Shohei Ohtani does. He's a pitcher and a hitter. He's a first baseman when he plays in the field. It's more of a hit over power type. And on the mound, he's more of a number three starter. Am I wrong in any of that, Brett?
Nope. So
my issue with that is we know how we feel on this podcast about mid-rotation starters, right? I mean, his fastball is not an elite velocity. What he does have is elite command and elite control. It might not be elite command yet, but he has the chance to get there. It's very good control. He spots his fastball really well. He's got a good slider. And there's at least a semblance of a third pitch there. So there's a lot there present right now. But he's got a few things working against him that he's probably not going to add a ton. He's not the Mackenzie Gore mold in terms of his physicality. And on top of that, he's in the Rays system, and they are notoriously slow with the way that they move their prospect along. And on top of that, he's got some developmental hurdles in that he's going to get time at first base as well. And then you go to the first base side, hit over power first baseman, just are not that valuable. I mean, I think they struggle to establish a ton of value. And even with the power at the major league level, I don't think we're talking about a 30 home run bat. So what are you really getting here? How long until you get it? And then, you know, what can go wrong along the way is kind of the way I'm looking at this, because neither of these are, I'm not even going to say elite outcomes, but even, you know, the tier below elite, they're not even great outcomes in my opinion. So why is he 11th?
Yeah, I think you're selling his upside a little short, even though it's not great on either side. I think he could be a very solid SP4 if he's a pitcher. And I think, you know, he is a hit over power first baseman, but I do think he's capable of running up to 25 homers. So I don't think his upside as a hitter is low enough that it's worth sort of flogging him over it.
So if that's what we're talking about upside, what do you think is likely for both on the mound and, you know, at first?
I think he is, if he ends up being developed as a starting pitcher, I think he's likely a top 40 to 50 starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. If he is developed as a hitter, I think he is a, you know, somewhere between the 10th and 15th ranked first baseman.
Okay. I think that's his upside, between 10 and 15 first base. I don't think he gets beyond that. So I think his likelihood is substantially lower. You know, Ben, I don't want to belabor a McKay thing, but he's a really interesting guy. In my opinion, obviously it's more intrigue over upside, but you know, where do you weigh in on this? Just to, I think people would benefit from the more that we can talk about this.
This is an incredibly sexy opinion. I don't love him that much, but I think he's fine here because I'm looking at the names after him and I don't see anyone I like much more. I think Kyle Wright is a better pitching prospect, but I totally understand why McKay's multiple paths to value would let Brett place him here. So I guess it has less to do with how much I love McKay and more to do with this is just a really shallow class and the rest of these guys don't move the needle for me very much.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the first two tiers. Again, I'm not going to go person by person. From 12, who is Jaron Kendall, through 21, who's Pavin Smith, we have a tier. I'm just going to ask Brett, who was the most likely to make it look bad that they weren't in the top 10 for you?
The most likely to make it look
bad. Like who do you think has the best likelihood of busting out of this? You know what I mean?
I am going to go in a little different direction than I think you might think. I'm going to go with Seth Romero.
That is different, but I don't disagree.
It's never really been a question about talent with Romero. If he can figure out how to tap into that talent, then I think he could easily be the guy that you look back and wonder why he was so low on this list. He's got SP2 upside. He's got the same upside that Boz has. And it's, he's a college arm, so he's closer to it. There's a bridge that he needs to cross. And if he starts crossing it in 2018, he could make a big jump.
Yeah. And you got to appreciate that he saved some mileage on his arm by getting suspended multiple times and ultimately thrown off his college team.
Yeah.
Always appreciate that. Ben, same question to you.
If Brett took Romero,
you can second it if you think that's the way to go.
No, I'll take and we talked about this a little bit the other night in an internal discussion. It's a boring answer because he's at 13, but Kyle Wright's not that bad.
Yeah,
I feel like he's getting dinged because he's not exciting. But I mean, there's a chance he's a fairly fast moving SP3/4. So I don't think it would ever look super, super silly that he wasn't in the top 11 here. But I mean, he's certainly a much safer prospect than guys like Gore, Ramos, Green, even Berger, I would say, because of the strikeout issues. So we might just be underselling Wright's floor a little bit here.
Yeah, and I actually think he's got more upside than, well, certainly Brett does, and I think I slandered you in the G-chat. I threw you together, so I'm proud of you for picking him. You know, I would say that, you know, my answer is, this is going to surprise nobody, but Bubba Thompson, who is the toolsy Rangers outfielder, who has a hit tool, not issue, but risk. I think I like the kind of improvement he made with the hit tool over the course of his senior season, and I think he can expand on it. That's going to surprise nobody. Brett, can you just tell me the difference between Nick Prado, Pavin Smith, and Evan White? Honestly, like, they're all just the same to me.
Kinda. I think Prado could be more.
Yeah.
I think Smith is kind of locked into being what he is, which is, I mean, I put it in there. He's basically Matt Theis, but having never caught, which, I mean, I think Smith can hit. I don't think the power is coming, and not in a Brendan McKay. I don't think the power is coming in a noticeable way. I don't think the power is coming like he might hit 10 home runs. It's not a great fantasy profile. Evan White, God bless you if you're a hitter in the Mariners system. I am. Hitters in the Mariners systems, pitchers in the Orioles systems, just drop them all 15 spots immediately.
Okay, and I'm gonna throw it out at you again, Brett. Defend yourself on Adam Haseley, because I'm gonna quote you from the New York Mets event that we had over the summer. You said he's a power speed guy who doesn't hit for much power or run very much.
It's true.
That's not enticing.
Yes, but look at the list behind him. This draft class.
You put Drew Waters behind him. How dare you? That man has a glorious truck.
I really, really like Drew Waters, but Drew Waters is very risky. I think Adam Haseley is a major leaguer, and he has a hit tool. And you know what? There's a chance that he could grow into a little bit. There's a chance he could grow into 20 homer power, especially in Philadelphia. And if he can hit, you know, if he can hit for a decent average, get to 20 homers and steal, you know, 10, 12 bases, that's a pretty good fantasy profile. I don't think he's necessarily going to get there, but it's not as dull of a fantasy profile as you think it is.
If you say so.
I
find it difficult to accept. Can we just again? I'm so mad about the name Pavin. It's throwing me off. Let me recover and talk, Brett, continue to talk about Mark Vientos, who I really like. He was a much lower pick, but he is part of your Mets system. Tell me what's great about him, and also how he's going to have suffer a career-ending injury.
Yeah, I mean, he's
or probably disease. Go wild.
He's probably going to fall into a bottomless pit. But there's, you know, he's got plenty of upside. He's extraordinarily young. He was, I believe, the youngest player in the entire draft, or maybe the second youngest player. Either way, he didn't turn 18 until well after the season was over. You know, he's definitely not a shortstop, but he could be a power hitting third baseman. You know, it'll just take him a while, and he might get struck by lightning before he gets there, but it's possible.
Okay, Ben, I'm going to skip to number 24 on the list. Brent Rooker is outfielder, probably going to end up a first baseman in the Minnesota system. He had a monster senior season. I think he was in the SEC. Brett can probably correct me if I'm wrong. But he just put up monster numbers in his draft year, and kind of got the, like, Benintendi vibes because of the breakout year. I think it was in the SEC, which might have played into it. But he hit for a lot of power, a lot of swing and miss. Are you, again, I know you opt for some of these, the beefier guys. I don't think he's in that mold physically, but are you into this power hitter, or are you laying off?
It was the SEC, so you're right there. Okay. I mean, excellent. I think I'm into him because there is no buzz about him, as far as I can tell, at all.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's 24 here, and that might raise his profile a little bit, but I don't think I've heard his name mentioned.
He's also 23 in life, we should mention. Mm-hmm. That's one thing working against him.
Yeah, sure. There are definitely warts here, but I think that not to beat a dead horse here, but this is just not a very inspiring draft class.
Yeah.
I think you're justified taking him over some of the guys who went, you know, much earlier than him. I mean, if you wanted to take Brent Rooker over Pavin Smith, I don't think that's not a justifiable choice.
I think that's fair. He lifts the ball a lot, and you know, he hit for average despite a really high K rate. He walks a lot. I mean, you have to like all of those things. The position is concerning, right? But it at the same time, it is legitimate power. I mean, he hit 18 home runs in 62 games between rookie and high A. He hit for power and average high A. Yeah.
That's the thing, is like some of those age concerns start to go away if he's already at high A.
Yeah.
Not that 23 is super young for high A, but you know, he's not 23 in short season.
Right.
So that does mitigate a little bit of the advanced age concerns.
Yeah. The Twins are going to be aggressive. I'll throw this out. He's going to be on our Twins top 10, and the Twins are, which is coming out Friday. We'll see if that's a preview or not, because I don't know when we'll get to post this, but the Twins top 10 is actually quite good. It's a deep system with a lot of upside, and he might not have the upside to match some of the guys on this list or that list, but I think there's definitely risk in the strikeout rate, but there's a decent amount to like too. And again, like you said, no buzz. I think there's probably a lot of value there.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's so many names, and so many of them are uninteresting. I just give me two guys you like and two guys you really don't, each of you, really quick. Brett, let's start with you.
Two guys I like and two guys I don't. I like Sam Carlson, the right-hander in Seattle. He's not a dead man walking like all of their hitting prospects, but he's a low profile, prep arm who I think has, a pretty good chance of being a fantasy contributor, at least in terms of prep arms. It's really kind of shitty down here. I like Dalton Varsho a lot, mm-hmm. From a bat perspective.
It's not a real name, but go ahead.
He's not a good shot to stick at catcher, but he's got the athleticism and the potential with the bat that he could have fantasy value even if he has to move off the position. So,
okay, real quick, two guys you don't.
Two guys I don't. David Peterson sucks. I don't need to go on to any more than that. He's not someone you want to own. Let me scroll back up. I will say that I am not getting particularly excited about the return of Miles Mikolas. I think at best he's a back end starter, and at worst he's just a waste of time.
Okay. Ben, where are you going? And then I'll throw a couple names out as well. Okay.
All right, the two guys that the first guy I like is Ryan. I don't know if it's Velade or Villade. I don't know how you want to say it.
Just say it as messed up as you probably. Villade.
Right, Ryan Robert. The Rockies have a really good they're the opposite of the Orioles or Mariners, like we were talking about earlier. They have really good success with guys with his profile. And while, the more years I do this, the less and less I factor in a potential future in cores for someone as far away as he is. You know, it's a very slight contextual boost there too. So he's someone who I would probably have a few slots higher. Other than that, God, it's just a bad list. I guess I hate guys with this profile, but out of guys with this profile, I liked Nate Pearson more than I thought I would.
I was going to say him. I think he's not that far from Sam Carlson, frankly. It's just big arms and stuff like that.
I didn't know a lot about him, but you know, when his name popped up in the Blue Jays top 10 list, I did some research into him, and I think when we do he won't sniff the top 101, but when I do the list after that, I'll probably end up plugging him a little bit as sort of a guy I like for someone with his profile. In terms of guys I don't like, Brett stole one of my answers with Nicolas. I'm not in on him at all. And I'm also totally out on DL Hall, literally because he is an Orioles starter.
DL,
what did I say?
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, well, right. The irony of all ironies. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm stunned you didn't stump for Logan Warmoth. I thought we were going to get into that.
I don't think he's as bad as you do, but I think he's fine at 32. Like, whatever.
That's fine. I like Tristan Lutz. He's 26. I think it was a good aggressive ranking. He's a Brewers. Was he actually in the second round or first supplemental?
He was still in the supplemental, I thought.
So maybe so, but he was their second pick. I think he's got some upside. He's got some pop. It's very much pull side, but he's an interesting guy. I think people know about him, to be honest. I was going to say a guy I don't love as much as Logan Warmoth. I think we've talked about it. It's a smattering of useful tools, but nothing that's going to be a standout or really separate himself from any other shortstop. And I think ultimately, even at the major league level, it's just going to get washed out. Another name that I do like, I like Chris Seiss from the Rangers. Fancy that. I like another Rangers draft pick. He really hit after he was drafted, and I think he's a good bet to stick at shortstop. It's just someone who I really like. And again, someone I don't like as much, and this is nothing to do with tools, but Wander Franco for the Rays. I mean, just we're going to get another Dusty from Colorado up in every goddamn chat asking about another Wander Franco. I can't. Oh, that's Wander Javier, but it's a Wander carryover, and I can't get with it. I'm out on him on the name, just on the name Wander. So,
Jeter might like him though.
Yeah, Jeter. No else. But you know who else Jeter might like who had no else? Enya.
Welcome back to episode 97 of Tino. Another change we're making is I am no longer going to try to cleverly tie in the first segment into our welcome back, because usually I'm at least one drink in at this point. And frankly, the effort is not worth the reward. So our second segment is going to be the first 2018 edition of our positional breakdown. So those of you who know us and have been with us for a few years now understand that every year at BP, basically once the new year starts, we go very, very in depth from a fantasy point of view about one catcher a week leading up to the season. So this week it's catcher, and up on BP right now we have every sort of ranking and analysis you could want. We have sleepers, we have staff pick and avoid, we have three-year rankings, dynasty rankings, rankings just for 2018, get to know just about catcher prospects, and we have Brett's dynasty ranking list, which is what we are going to speak about now. So Brett, I will continue the key metaphor, because we can't get rid of everything that people love about Tino, and I will toss the medical keys to you. Metaphorical, not the medical
keys. No, medical keys.
The medical keys.
All right, well, I guess you have both. You have both. Yeah.
Watch out for the health injuries.
We are going to talk about catchers, but we are not going to talk about catchers for very long, because frankly, in a dynasty league, catchers are not particularly interesting. They don't have much, they don't have much value on the trade market. If you have a good one, you're not even thinking about the position for a number of years, If you have a bad one, you've either just given up or you're trying to get one of the handful of good ones. So why don't we talk about the good ones and just make sure that these are in the right order, and then kind of talk about guys that we like to you know, potentially be, you know, top 10 options in the future. Because I think, you know, I think figuring out the guys who are going to be in the top 10 or 12 or 15 for 2018, I think is less interesting because they all kind of look the same. Let's start all the way at the top. Craig, is there any doubt for you that Gary Sanchez is the clear number one fantasy catcher in dynasty leagues?
No.
Okay. Ben?
No, I can't even fake argue.
Okay. My number two catcher is Wilson Contreras. I have him leapfrogging Buster Posey, not for 2018 reasons, but for, 2020 and beyond reasons. Ben, do you think the combination of the upside and the youth pushes Contreras ahead of Posey, or are you still going with our known leader?
As long as they're in the same tier, I'm fine, but you're barking up the wrong tree if you want me to be the anti-Wilson Contreras voice.
Fair enough. So be the pro Wilson Contreras voice. What do you expect out of him?
He's young, and I think he's at least going to retain catcher eligibility for the next while, especially as long as Joe Maddon, who I hate but who is creative, is his manager. And I think that within the next 2 years, his offensive potential could surpass Posey. I think Posey's a little, I don't know, maybe a little underrated in Dynasty right now. I certainly wouldn't drop him any lower than three. I guess I should say Posey's near-term impact is perhaps becoming a little bit underrated. But given the abuse Posey has taken, it would not surprise me if by 2020 or so, Contreras is the better option. And given the age difference in a Dynasty league, that's enough to just nudge him ahead. But they do belong in the same tier for me.
Okay. Let's go down slightly lower and give Craig the opportunity to talk about Francisco Mejia a little bit, who checks in at number four. What do you expect out of Mejia in 2018? Because a lot, you know, I think we all kind of have an idea of what Mejia can be long term. But you know, the tricky part about figuring out what your plan is at catchers, if you have Mejia, do you need a more solid 2018 option, even if they have much lower ceiling than the young potential stud?
Yeah, I think you do. And I don't think it's close. There's a lot to love about Mejia, and I've been speaking his praises for what feels like a decade now, but it's only been 5 years. But he was only at Double A last year, and he was really good at Double A, but he hasn't had any Triple A seasoning. He got, you know, a cup of coffee in the majors and was very much overmatched there. And I don't think it's a guarantee. You know, they have Yan Gomes, who has been out and out terrible, and they have Roberto Perez, who can't hit at all and is a very good defensive catcher who they like a lot, and who, frankly, their lineup, you know, they don't need production out of catcher to, I mean, first of all, that division's terrible, so I don't think they have a huge incentive to rush Mejia for his bat. And secondly, you know, they have guys who they trust to handle their pitchers, which I think they value a little bit more. I don't think they're going to be rushing him. I don't think he's necessarily going to be in the majors until after, I think it could be July. Do you think that's crazy?
No, I don't think that's crazy at all. I think he was close to Perez and Realmuto just because I am very concerned about what his 2018 value is going to look like.
No, I love the long term. I think there are people who I've seen say that it seems like he's moving in the direction of being a third baseman. I don't think that's true. I think it's something they wanted to see about his flexibility and to see how they could maybe work him in, because they do have these two other catchers and potentially, you know, they can play Kipnis in the outfield or on the DL, which seems very possible, and Jose Ramirez at second base. And that way they could, you know, they just have more depth in their system. I'm not too worried about him being a third baseman long term, and I'm definitely not worried about him losing catcher eligibility over it. You know, in fantasy, I think
that's way overblown in dynasty circles right now.
I mean, the bottom line is, it's not going to be an eligibility issue. He might play more third base, but if he retains that eligibility, that's good news, frankly, assuming his bat can justify getting in the lineup every day. And I'm less worried about that than most. That's my Mejia spiel.
Yeah. I don't think there is anyone else who we absolutely need to cover here. So we'll do a little lightning round, and then I'll give you guys a chance to talk about one or two guys on this list that you think, you know, should get a little bit more love or a little less love than they are getting. Ben, how many 25 home run seasons will Mike Zunino have for the rest of his career?
Oh God!
R.I.P. Meg. Let's just.
Pour one out. how old is Zunino now? Like 27, 28, 26. Four.
Okay. Craig, will JT Realmuto ever steal double-digit bases again?
Yeah, I think so. Let me just say, I acknowledge the risk in it, but he's really athletic, and I think he can. I mean, he was at 8 last year. I don't think it's necessarily. I know these guys stop running a lot. You know, it drops off the table, I should say. But I think there's actually a decent chance he does it next in 2018. I wouldn't expect it for a long term, though.
Okay, Ben. Over under on Jorge Alfaro's strikeout to walk rate, 9.5. And part two, do you care?
Under and no.
Same. Craig, what the hell is going on in Dodger land behind the plate?
Yeah, I think I saw you answer a question on Twitter today about Austin Barnes as someone going from underrated to overrated already. I think I'm on board with that. I've never been the most Austin Barnes guy in the room, but he had a great year, and I think he's, you know, he's short to the ball. He makes a lot of great contact. He doesn't hit for any power. I mean, it's like JT Realmuto without the speed, and maybe a little bit less average. Like, I don't know what the appeal is from a fantasy sense. I mean, if you want a guy who's just, you can throw back there and you can get by, I think that's fine. I ultimately think he'll be in a platoon with Grandal. I think Grandal's a free agent at the end of this year, so it's not necessarily a long-term issue. But I think he'll be in a platoon with Grandal, and I'm going to get people responding or thinking to themselves, yeah, but he hits righties really well. Yeah, he does, but Grandal is still really useful as a lefty. He's always been better as a lefty, and I think his framing is still really good, as is Barnes, and the Dodgers benefit the most from splitting them up and keeping them refreshed, and you know, so they don't wear down over the course of the season. And if either one of them is on a monster tear, they'll probably stick with that guy for a little bit until he tires out. So I don't think there's a lot of fantasy value just because they're not going to get a ton of time each.
Yep, that's fair. I am not on the Austin Barnes bandwagon like everyone on Twitter seems to be, but I am very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Ben, how many more top 10 catcher seasons does Yadi Molina have in him?
19.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So the Cardinals are going to play him until he... I don't know. At what age do humans physically decompose?
Like, at what point? Okay, if I'm going to go off my own experience, 24.
Oh, that's extremely bad news then.
Yeah.
How many more top 10 seasons does Molina have? Three. I want to say zero, but I he's weird. Three.
Carson Kelly's going to be an amazing 27-year-old rookie.
37-year-old rookie at this point.
Good point.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that Yachty extension to kick in. A new one. Don't worry. A new one.
Craig, give us the 30-second fantasy introduction to Kyber Ruiz.
Oh,
Kyber?
He is a switch hitting catcher. I think he's gonna get like a big recognition value bump because he already spent a little bit of time in the California League and he hit really well as a 19-year-old there. He's got the tools to stick at the position. I'm honestly not worried about that too much. He makes a ton of contact. He hasn't struck out more than 15% of his plate appearances at any single stop, no matter how short or long. He's not going to hit for like a ton of power. He had 8 home runs last year, 6 of them in under 40 games in the Cal League. That's what those environments are like. But he has a solid approach. He makes a lot of contact. As usual, he's got more power in his left-handed swing, but he hits for average. I mean, he's 19 years old right now. He's going to start next season as a 19-year-old. He hit .317 in low A. He hit .315 in high A. There's a lot to like. And he's someone who, frankly, we ranked 4th on the Dodgers list, and we got feedback from the industry that was low. And other sites, if you want to go outside VP, BA and others, you know, other sites, I think had him at least 3, if not higher. So this is not a case of me being biased as a Dodgers fan or anything like that. This is someone that the organization really likes, other people really like. I have a fetish for the fantasy catchers, but I think he's the real deal, and his value is going to explode. I think he would reach AA by the end of next season as a 20-year-old, and there's just a lot of long-term value there. If you're going to make me call someone, look, I hear you, Brett. You're demanding that I call someone the next Francisco Mejia. It's Kyber Ruiz.
Yeah, I put that in the column too.
I didn't even read that. I'm just saying it just happened.
Fair enough. It's natural. Yeah. Ben, who is the best? Who is the best Dynasty League catcher right now in the Boston Red Sox?
It's still Swihart because Vasquez is not going to have a 10 billion BABIP forever. It's just stay away from the entire situation, right? Because Vasquez, the best you're ever getting out of Vasquez is an empty average. And while Swihart could be good, the odds of that at this point are what, 10%? So unless you have a magic 8-ball, which actually this is not how magic 8-balls work, but unless you had a magic 8-ball that could tell you specific times, and you know the 3 weeks when Sandy Leon is going to turn into Johnny Bench this year, because he does that every year, other than that, just stay away from it.
All right. Craig, pick one catcher in the back, from the back 20 of the list, so from 31 to 50, who you think I am underselling.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Okay. Can I pick a heavy sigh?
Yeah, you can.
I have an answer for this.
Ben, please, save me.
I think if we're having this conversation in a year, we could be talking about Ronaldo Hernandez the way we're talking about Kyber Ruiz now, which is the way that we were talking about Francisco Mejia.
You're such a dick.
So you're saying Ronaldo Hernandez is the next Frankie Mejia?
Yes, exactly.
We need to Ben, you're going to be too young to not remember. Brett, do you remember when ESPN did that entire whole thing of who's next?
Oh,
I remember had like a bracket.
Shit. No, I was writing blog posts about
that. You don't know Boz Luhrmann, you don't get to talk about this. I think we need to do an entire catcher thing of who's next for the next Francisco Mejia. Who was the previous Francisco Mejia? That's the real question.
The previous Francisco Mejia, was it Travis Darnell?
Oh God!
No, they don't have
Swihart. It was Swihart.
Yeah, okay.
I think it was Swihart.
Yeah, like
switch hitter with a hit tool.
Yeah,
I like that. No, George, shut up. I'm not talking about Austin Barnes again. God,
that is the second Jordan shut up of the podcast, even if it's the first audible one.
Okay, I need to give you an answer here.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I like the Ronaldo Hernandez answer just because even though he is a catcher, it's a hit first profile, which you have to appreciate as a fantasy owner. I'll go with Danny Jansen. He's on the Blue Jays list that we just published if you want to get some more information. But he's another one of these swing change guys. I don't know if it's real or not. So here's the deal. If it's real, I think this is going to look bad and he should be higher. He's older, but he really tore up the first level he was at, and he leveled off at double A. I think he was at high A. Yeah. He was at high A to start the year. 369, 422, 541. Now,
what was that?
369. I'm sorry.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you. But he played the majority of the season at double A. He still hit 291 there. It was not the same type of slash line. He is 22 already. He'll be 23 for the 2018 season. So there's a lot of risk here, but ultimately what it could end up being, and I think this is what Ben put in the fantasy blurb, but look, if he played at AAA this year as well, so he's going to be close to the majors, and if he can hit for that kind of power, and again, he slugged .552 in 21 games at AAA, that's enough to be fantasy relevant and to be much higher on this list than the Cameron Rupps of the world. So, this isn't a full-throated sell job for Danny Jansen, but it's someone who could definitely be underranked at this moment if the swing change is for real.
Brett, I have my first and only catcher hot take before we move on.
About number 15. Oh, is it about number
15? You can transition right from this catcher hot take into your topic.
No, I can't.
Sorry.
This is gonna be bold. You ready?
Uh-huh.
I think ranking Zach Collins ahead of Chance Disco and Keibert Ruiz is indefensible at this point.
Wow.
Whoa.
I don't think there's a good argument for it.
I think there's a good argument for it.
Well, you ranked him ahead, so I assumed you felt that way.
Yeah, let's settle it with that and leave people. What's your argument?
Zach Collins, he's never going to hit for great average.
Is it because he's what you wanted Matt Vice to be?
Basically, I believe in Collins' power, and I do believe that this year Collins' his number one focus was getting better behind the plate, and his number two focus was getting better behind the plate, and I think his offense lagged behind for those reasons. I think
did he get better behind the plate?
He got better enough. I
don't think that's clear.
I think he can maintain eligibility.
Okay. Well, Cisco at this point is a lock to be a major leaguer who's going to have catcher eligibility for at least a little bit of time. And we're saying Ruiz could be the next Mejia. So I don't see it at all. Collins is not, we'll argue about this in a few weeks, but Collins is not a top 101 guy for me. And it's not, I don't think it's particularly close.
Excited to see this argument in G-Chat.
It's going to end up with Brett ranking him like 91st. Cause the way we do it is we just,
what I'm extremely excited about is, and this is probably just because he was a White Sox catcher, you have Tyler Flowers right behind him. Zach Collins is going to be, he's going to put together a Tyler Flowers 2017 season in like 5 years for the A's or some crap.
Yeah, at first base.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Or it's the A's, so maybe in center field.
All right, so Ben, why don't you take us into the final topic?
Okay, so the one thing I wanted to talk about, which is not dynasty related, but just because, Twitter is always garbage. Twitter is always bad, and it never improves your mood. But there are few things as uniquely miserable as off-season baseball Twitter. So I just wanted to take maybe 2 to 3 minutes each. No, let's say 3 minutes total, to vent about our least favorite parts of off-season Twitter, and I have so many poorly crafted snarky tweets to this, but mine is just the gross overreaction to any player costing any money ever. So at the point where any good player is actually bad because he has a big salary, any okay player is actually bad because he costs more than A guy you can pull up from the minors. So like people are pissed about Jay Bruce right now. Jay Bruce is going to make is 30 years old and he's a productive hitter and he's going to make $13 million a year, which is essentially nothing in today's MLB. And people are the most butthurt about it. Or Eric Hosmer could decide to play for free and donate $4 million a year to charity. And we'd have people complaining about how it doesn't work for tax reasons and he's going to block Don Smith. So I'm just very over the Twitter. Everybody is bad. I'm too cool to want any player ever. If Mike Trout was a free agent, these people would bitch and moan if someone gave him $400 million. So I hate it, and I hope that Eric Hosmer signs a $200 million contract and buys a fleet of buses that says, suck it, nerds, and drive every BP or Fangraphs conference from now through the end of time.
Oh, that was fantastic. I was not expecting the bus part, but I don't know
how to follow that up.
Very excited for someone to say, yeah, well, buses aren't the most efficient form of travel.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't you just raise a car on your farm system and they'll give you a Prius? Fuck you.
Are they fuel-efficient buses?
Okay, so I'll go next. So my thing is a very, very pet peeve thing, but I really just I feel like, and maybe it's just because nothing is happening, and the excitement over Jay Bruce signing a deal with the Mets is proving this. But we're all turning on each other, and I'm more than happy to jump in and turn on everybody who does quote this tweet with whatever, and then I see that and some piece of information that I don't give a flying fuck about 90 billion people, because everyone's retweeting each other. I don't even follow that many people, okay? And yet people are constantly retweeting other people and then adding their own two cents. And you know what? I don't care. I don't care about any of it. I don't care what you think is a Christmas movie. I don't care why you block people. I don't care why someone's blocked you. I don't care what your Little League story is. I don't care about any of it. And I understand. I can just not follow these people. I understand that this is my problem. But you know what? I'm also one third of this podcast, so I don't give a fuck. That's just how I feel.
I love how you snuck in that. I don't even follow that many people. Just a classic Craig aside. It was perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Nothing like being self-aggrandizing.
That's true. All right. I guess this leaves me. So I'll do the rant that some of you probably expected to hear from somebody. I have nothing but respect for what Ryan Thibodeau does in putting together the ballot tracker. But I have Twitter has made me really not give a fuck about the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's a great one. I'm so jealous.
I am now old enough that I remember watching all of these players pitch, like, vividly. I remember how good they were. I don't care who makes the Hall of Fame. Scott Rowland was really good. I don't care if he falls off the ballot. Vladimir Guerrero was amazing to watch. I don't care if he makes the Hall of Fame.
Can I add to this?
Absolutely.
I don't care. What I super duper don't care about is people who are like, this guy's not a Hall of Famer, but he deserves to be on the ballot for more than 1 year.
Yeah.
Buddy, if he's not a Hall of Famer, just let's move the hell on. Can we, please? I'm begging you.
Yes. I will say that is my stance on the off-season Hall of Fame thing. The only thing I do like is seeing the people who have so little to do that they complain about the people who make the ballot who won't get any votes, as opposed to the people who didn't make the ballot who won't get any votes. Like the people who were I think this year was Javier Vasquez, that people were complaining didn't make the sheet.
Mm-hmm. Javier Vasquez?
Yep. No, that was actually a thing. He would have gotten one vote, no votes probably. Who cares? Who cares?
Guys, how excited are you for when Eric Hosmer is on the Hall of Fame ballot?
Oh my God.
I'm sure Twitter won't be a thing then, but if it
is, I hope he has 5 World Series MVPs somehow.
I hope he gets in first ballot.
Will be just this good.
I want Edgar Martinez to make the Hall of Fame, but a future with Eric Hosmer in the Hall of Fame and Edgar Martinez not in it would almost be worth it just for the Twitter reactions.
Yeah, and you know, I
want to... In 20 years, the three of us are going to be Hall of Fame voters, and if Sarah Hosmer qualifies for the ballot, we are going to all write, we're going to hand write Enya on the ballot, check the box, and mail it down.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to say is, like, I much respect to people like Ryan who care about this stuff, or like Jay Jaffe who created a freaking metric for it and does a ton of good work on it. I totally respect that. But here's, it's just like, it just doesn't matter. Like, the grading of ballots that we do is just insufferable to me. Like, you know, Ryan posts a ballot that someone has, and I respect him for doing that. He generally doesn't pass judgment almost ever. But then, you know, people, I see 15 quotes of his tweet being like, this is a good ballot. This is a bad ballot. This is, who cares? Like, stop grading ballots. Grading people, grading other people is just the sort of meta shit that I thought we left behind in 2014. We need to move on.
Yes, and also the people who look at ballots who they think are good and grade them based on what they think the correct ballot is.
Correct.
Like, no, fuck you. There is no correct ballot.
Yeah, I just, and the other thing is, like, again, much respect to the people who care about it, but
Craig, do you respect people who care about it? Yeah, I can't tell. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. I wanted to clarify that. But the Hall of Fame is so broken and has people out that should be in and people in that should be out, and it's never going to be fixed. And like, let's just stop giving it credence. Go stump for creating a new one. I'll support that, and then you can make it as stringent as you want or as right as you want, however you think that is. But the current one is so, you know, it's fucked five ways from Sunday. Just move on.
Yes.
We do have to talk about the fact that Brett ended the podcast and you blew right by it, Craig.
Right by it.
Yeah.
I have white hot rage going in my head right now.
That's a 15-yard penalty for unnecessary roughness on Enya. Welcome back to episode 97 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Be sure to hop on Baseball Prospectus over the next few weeks to catch up with our fantasy positional series. As I mentioned earlier, it contains everything from rankings just for 2018 to three-year rankings, dynasty rankings, expert picks to target and avoid, prospect deep dives, anything you could want. It is a great primer for the upcoming fantasy season, and we hope you enjoy. And it's worth pointing out that we are also in the home stretch for our top 10 IRL prospect lists too. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at SayerBP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
Can't discuss the Hall of Fame without blowing past any references.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night. Whoa.
It will That's still be loud. Cool. Let's be real. But it won't be as loud.
But it won't be deafening?
That's apparently the, yeah.
He had his microphone on the, like, basically the surround sound setting. So it was picking up the keyboard pretty loud because of that.
Oh, it sure was, George.
Yeah.
It sure was.
I literally said to him, I said, do you have your microphone on the right setting? And he said,
I didn't know there were settings.
Yeah, I didn't
I'm
know
old.
That
I'm officially old.
Yeah, that's what did it.
Dude, what mic do you have, then?
I have a Yeti.
George, we're changing the entire course of Tino tonight.
97 episodes in.